Welcome to Babbittville Radio, a place where you'll hear great conversations with the world's best and most inspirational runner, triathletes, and cyclists. Endurance lives here. Now, here's your host, USA Triathlon and Ironman Triathlon Hall of Famer, Bob Babbitt.
Welcome back to Babbittville Radio. My name is Bob Babbitt. We're brought to you by Ironman U, by EverySite.com. Amazing technology. Check out EverySite.com. RunCatalina.com. We got the Catalina Eco Marathon coming up on Saturday, November 21st. And our Challenge Athletes Foundation, where we've raised over $70 million for athletes around the world to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. And you can check out any of our interviews on iTunes or at Babbittville.com. Our next guest, one of the premier age group triathletes in the world, Miss Cherie Grunfeld. How are you, Cherie?
I'm great. How are you, Bob?
I am just wonderful. So 27 Ironman races, 21 Konas, 6 age group wins, 6 different age groups, 18 different wins, and 13 in Kona. I mean, let's talk epic. When you look back on it, you go, oh, my God, I can't believe what I've done.
When I look back on it, I think I was so young when I started. And I'm so old now.
Well, now, you're 70 to 74.
I'm 71.
You're 71.
Let's not push this. I'm 71. Yeah.
Wow. It's so funny because when you talk to women, usually it's like, that's real rude to ask me my age. But when it's an athlete, it's like, I'm 71. I'm not 70. I'm 71.
Yes, I am. And I was 48 when I started, which is considered old in triathlon terms. But I thought I was young at that time.
So what got you into it back then?
You know, I saw I had started running marathons when I was 42, and then I saw an article in your magazine, Competitor.
Yeah.
And it was in October of 91, and I saw, and it was a big article. The whole thing was devoted to Ironman.
Right.
And I read it, and now by this time I'm running marathons, but I read it and I thought, holy cow, how can these people do this marathon after they've swum and biked?
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine it. And I put the magazine down and I left it, and my husband Lee, who you know very well,
yep,
picked it up and read it, and he said to me, you should do this. You can do this. I didn't own a bike. I hadn't been swimming since I was a kid, but eventually he talked me into it. I decided to give it a shot, and I did it the next year.
So you did Kona in 92?
I did. You know, I called. I didn't know anything about qualifying. I just thought you send in your money and you
win.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I called a guy who you know down in San Diego that I'd read in your magazine, did some coaching, Ron Smith.
Oh, yes.
And I said to him, Ron, I'm not a triathlete, but I'm going to do Kona next year. And he took me from there, explained the whole process that I had to qualify. And I signed up for Canada because I figured I couldn't qualify. And I did Mike and Rob's Most Excellent Triathlon in Ventura in August and qualified for Kona.
That was an Olympic distance, right?
And no, you,
oh,
no,
it was
that
a half.
Was a half.
It was a half,
yeah.
You're right. And that was a qualifier back then, that's right.
That was. So,
wow.
You know, I had no idea. I didn't even know it was a qualifier. I didn't know anything.
Ignorance is bliss.
October in 92, I found myself at the start line.
And what was that feeling like being at the epicenter of the sport, really, in like 1 year after finding out about it?
You know, I kind of walked around in a daze, and Lee took a lot of pictures on race day.
Yeah.
And in every single one of those pictures, I just had this big loopy grin on my face. All day long, I remember thinking, I'm doing this thing. I'm actually doing this thing. So it was really exciting.
And,
really exciting.
And how'd you do that first year?
I did 12:26.
Wow. And how did that place in one of your 6 age divisions?
Well, I was 45 to 49 at that time.
Yes.
And I placed 9th that year. Took me 2 years to start getting on the podium. But when I went there, I figured maybe I could do it in 14 hours.
Right.
So
you surprise yourself.
Was pretty good, yeah.
And being a marathoner, coming from that background, I'm betting when you got off the bike, you were like, finally.
Exactly. Exactly. And I ran a 4:06, I think, that first year.
Wow.
And I was surprised it took me so long. And then I realized that was a pretty good time for a marathon in an Ironman.
Now, when was the first time you actually won over there?
When I was 50, which was, 94.
Okay. And so you win for then. I mean, a lot of times people go, okay, my goal is to win my age division and then move on. But meanwhile, you win your age division, and that was just the beginning.
Yeah, you know, this stuff really hooked me. It's got everything that appeals to me. It's a challenge. Every year is different. There's always more and better that you can do. I loved the people. They were my kind of folks. And fortunately, I had a very supportive husband, and we didn't have kids. We don't have kids. And so my husband said, go do this thing. It seems to make you really happy. And so I was in. I was just in.
Now, the other side of this is this can be a very selfish endeavor, going out swimming, biking, and running all day. A number of years ago, you started exceeding expectations. You started this great charity where you're basically using a sport that people consider a high-end, upper-middle-class type of sport, and you've taken this sport and realized that this sport impacts everybody. Talk a little bit about the creation of Exceeding Expectations and how triathlon has helped these kids.
Well, this is, of course, the nearest and dearest to my heart.
Yeah.
I was invited to speak at a school, and this was in 2000. So I had a few Ironman races under my belt. So I was invited to speak at a school in San Bernardino, and I spoke to the kids about setting goals and working hard on these goals, and then I showed them a short little DVD of me doing Ironman. And these kids just really, they got involved. They asked good questions. So afterwards, I said to the teacher who had invited me, there's a little triathlon in the neighborhood, Redlands, coming up. I'm happy to take a couple of kids and work with them and get them ready. Well, it's a long story, but as it turned out, there were dozens of kids that wanted to do this. So I told them, come to the school ground on Saturday. I'll select a group of you. I selected 12 kids. And then I went into their homes because I thought these kids would have bikes and families and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So on a Saturday, after I'd selected these 12 kids, I went to pick these 12 kids up. And on that day, my life changed. I had no idea what these kids were living in, what kind of a hopeless environment they had. And so I went out to my triathlete friends. I believe you were one of the first ones I went to when they did this race and said, can you help us with bikes? Can you swim for the kids? Because the kids, we had to teach them to bike, and then we had to teach them to run. And, you know, the kids loved it. They performed well above what anyone ever expected that they would. And so after that first race, we went to another one and another one. And then suddenly I realized that the magic key here for these kids was not just the racing, but it was education. It was getting these kids educated because they didn't think, nor did their families think, that education was for them. They thought that was for other kids, and they told me that very clearly. So I used the sport of triathlon to teach these kids the skills that they're going to need, to teach them the confidence that they're going to need, to teach their families what can be accomplished in sport, and transferring that over into all the things they need to get good grades and to go on to college. So that's what we're doing, one kid at a time. And it seems to be working, and it all starts with triathlons or with racing.
And when we think of, again, when we think of our sport, and a lot of the entry fees are $50, $75, $100. These aren't families with that type of those type of dollars to put out for entry fees, not including bikes, helmets, et cetera. How supportive has the triathlon community been to get you what you need?
Unbelievable. It is absolutely unbelievable, the generosity of race directors, of athletes, of people that are in this community and in this sport. And we think of this as being a very entitled bunch of folks that do this kind of thing. But, you know, these entitled folks go out and buy a bike every 3 years, but they take their old bike and they send it to us for the kids. They buy beautiful clothes, but they send them to us when they're hardly worn. It's stunning at how generous this community is.
And when I see you guys with your trailer hauling, you know, these are all different size bikes, all different size kids, all different ages. It's you've got to be doing a little herding cats when you get these kids to these races, because it's, again, at the end of the day, they're out there swimming, biking, and running on their own.
Yes. Yeah, it is. But, you know, at the end of the day, there is as much reward as there is for me crossing an Ironman finish line. So, I am passionate about this.
The success stories. Again, we've seen the power of sport. And you, like you mentioned, a lot of these kids come from lower income homes, and all of a sudden the light bulb goes on going, wait a second, I've done this triathlon thing. I can achieve anything. And I know your goal is for these kids to graduate high school and then graduate college. How many of your kids have moved forward from, you know, from your program and are in college or are graduating college?
We have 14 in college right now.
Wow.
We have one that has graduated from UCSD. We have kids at one at Berkeley. We have one at UCLA. We have another one at UCSD. You know, these kids are doing things that they never believed that they could do. And it's worth mentioning, these kids cannot pay for college
no.
on their own.
They had to get scholarships.
Some of them can get some grants.
Yeah.
But the generosity of people just writing us checks, helping pay for kids to go to UCLA and UCSD. You know, when a kid comes into our program, I say to them in these exact words and to their families, your kid's job is to do a good job in school, get into the best college he can, and we will make sure that finances are not a problem. My heart pounds a little bit every time I say that. But through the generosity of the triathlon community and others, we've been able to do this.
Love that. That is so cool. So when you guys are racing, when you're racing age group, and there's obviously a race within the race. We see the pros and Jan Frodeno and Daniela Reef. And a lot of times we don't realize that there is a race within a race. And the 50-year-olds are racing against the other 50-year-olds in the 60s and the 70s. Most of the races, I'm guessing, are decided fairly early or, you know, not in the last mile of the race. This year you had a legendary race against Natalie. How does she pronounce it? Grabau.
Mm-hmm.
And take me through that, because you know, I'm assuming a lot of times, I mean, you know who the other gals are in your age division. They know you. And how intense was this year's race?
Well, it was about as intense as it's gotten. It's certainly, I've never had one like this. And it was terrific. Natalie moved into the 70-74. She's a terrific lady, and I have raced against her for a number of years, and she's been raising her game every single year. And I knew that she was coming into the age group, and she was loaded for bear. She was in good shape. I'd seen what her race results were for this year. Actually, there were three of us that I thought would contend for it, but the third one kind of fell out after the bike.
Right.
So Natalie got out of the water after I did, which is exactly what I thought would happen. I swim a little faster than she does. And so I got on the bike ahead of her. She normally will pass me towards the end of the bike, and then I pick her off on the run.
Right.
And that's the way it's been every time she and I have raced in Kona. So this year I got out of the water a little ahead of her, and I kind of knew she was going to pass me on the bike, but she passed me pretty early. We were headed up to Javi, somewhere in that area, and she passed me. And I saw her once again just a bit ahead of me, but she powered on again, and so I knew that she'd gotten off the bike ahead of me. I didn't know exactly how much, but I really wasn't concerned because I've always run her down, and I've usually always been able to get her somewhere on a lee. So I just started running. I didn't feel very good. My legs were really more tired than usual.
Yep.
So I kind of walked real briskly, but I walked through the aid station, stopped to get something, which I don't normally do. But I figured that that was the best strategy for this day. And I was running well in between the aid stations, and I kept thinking, I'll get her, I'll get her, I'll get her. And I kept thinking that as we got out onto the highway. And as we went down into the energy lab, it's black,
yes.
So it's very difficult to see. And I saw a woman a little bit ahead of me just after I turned at the energy lab, and I thought it was she. And I passed her, and I thought, okay, that's it. Now I finally got her. Let's get on home. Got out of the energy lab. I saw Lee, and he said, yeah, I think you did, because I haven't seen her come out. And I got about 2 miles further down the road, and somebody said to me, she's 2 minutes ahead of you.
Oh, my God. So you thought you had passed her.
Passed the wrong woman.
Oh.
So I just keep going, and I'm strangely not concerned, and I don't know why, because I was running out of real estate,
sure.
And I just kept thinking, I can get her, I can get her. And just the last big hill before you come up to Polani and down Polani.
Mark and Dave Hill. Yeah, yeah.
Mark and Dave Hill. I still hadn't seen her. And I'm about halfway up the hill, and somebody on the side of the road, a friend of mine, said to me, "Cherie, she's right there." And I looked, and sure enough, there was a shadow. I couldn't really see a person, but there was a shadow. And so I had another gear. I cranked it into this other gear, and as Natalie passed, there's one kind of light up there, and that when I saw her go under the light, I realized that was she. And I passed her just as she was turning down Polani.
So you're a mile, if that, to go.
1.2 miles to go. I figured I started at about 1.3, running hard to get her. And about one right at the top of the hill, and from there, Dave and Mark tell me that's 1.2, and I figure they must know.
Exactly, yeah.
So she took the corner a little wide, and so I cut right in between Natalie and the cone.
Yep.
And I just blasted. And she, I know, was very surprised. But I just blasted down that hill. There was one more aid station. I just blew them off. I didn't get out of my way.
Yeah, yeah.
My visor had been kind of falling down on my head, and I had to push it up through the whole run. I took it off because I figured I need everything good now.
Right.
Took it off and just flung it and just ran as hard as I could for the rest of the 1.2 miles. I figured, I don't know if she's staying with me, but I'm not taking any chance.
And you're not looking back.
I'm not looking back.
Yeah,
Just as I went down Walleye, some friends were standing there. Lee had called him. Lee was at the bottom of Polani, expecting to see Natalie first. And when he saw me, he just freaked. And so he called some friends who were waiting for me on Walleye to tell them that I was in the lead. So as I ran past them, they started yelling congratulations and all this stuff. And I just said, "Can you see her behind me?"
Yeah, right.
Because, and they didn't say anything. They didn't see anything. But I wasn't taking any chances. I just didn't even look at any of the people on Ali, nothing. I just went to that finish line. And then I waited for her once I got there.
And her line was, "My heart was willing, but my legs were having no part of it."
You know, she didn't say that then.
Oh.
She and I have been emailing today.
Oh, okay.
And she said that today. But, no, when she first came across the line, she was in pretty bad shape. And her handler said, "You know, we got to get her out of here." I thought they were going to go to medical. But she came around right away. And so she and I went over to the massage and sat for a while we waited for massage. And, you know, she was bitterly disappointed. But she was as good a sport as you could possibly be. She was just wonderful.
I love it. As you look at it, you know, you swam 1:31:48. She swam 1:34:58. 7:06 for your bike ride. She was 6:54:41. 5:15:44 for your run, and she went 5:21:20. So basically, you outran her by 5:36 to win by 3:14. Is that one of your closest races there?
Yes, I believe it is my closest race. Yeah.
Was it one of those things? Because, you know, it's one thing to win a race, but to race a race. And basically, you are racing for 15 solid hours where you can't let up and you catch her with 1.2 miles to go. I mean, that has to be one of the more satisfying ones.
You know, it couldn't have been more satisfying. I tell you, I think you know that I went into that race ready to make this my last Kona.
Yes. Yeah.
But I knew I couldn't do it unless I had a really special race.
Right.
I didn't know what that was, but I knew it had to be special. I couldn't have scripted this if I'd tried.
Yeah.
But this was it.
So you're
when
sure.
When I crossed that finish line, I thought, this is it. It doesn't get any better than this. This is the time to say goodbye.
You know what I love about that? It's when you think about Mark Allen in 1995 winning his last time, age of 37, coming from 12 and a half minutes down, the run down, Gerald Thomas Hellriegel. And if you think of Chrissy Wellington crashing 10 days before Kona and coming back and, you know, coming from, 20 minutes off the pace to win by 2 minutes over Marina Carfrae. And both of them walked away. They're like, "You know what? I have nothing left to accomplish here. I've done absolutely everything. I've taken my body to the edge and back." And sounds like you're leaning the same way.
Yeah, you know, I hesitate to put myself in that same group of people, but it is true. You know, I've had a long career, And I'm smart enough to recognize that was the moment. It's not going to get any better than that.
Well,
and since I think my body still has some stuff in it, but my mind doesn't. This was it.
Will you do shorter stuff or?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So you're a lifer.
Away.
You're not going away. Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going
you're
away.
Like
no,
me.
I'm very excited. I'm going to really focus on the 70.3s.
Perfect.
I have two titles there, and I figure I've got some years left to rack up a few more. So I'm going to get stronger and faster in the 70.3s.
So if people are interested in helping out on Exceeding Expectations, where can they go? What's the website?
For Exceeding Expectations, eefoundation.org.
Love that. Sheree, thank you for everything you do for our sport because, you know, you're one of those people who's always giving back, always there, even if it's a fellow age grouper in your age division, you're helping them out because you understand that it's all about you against the course at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, it's been a great ride, and I don't do any more than you do, Bob. I appreciate everything that you've done for the sport and for me.
I love it. Sheree Groenfeld has been our guest, the champion for the, was this the 13th Kona win?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. 13th win in six different age groups, 27 total Ironman races, 21 Konas, 18 total Ironman wins, and more 70.3s to come. We again are brought to you by Ironman U, EverySite.com, RunCatalina.com, coming up on November 21st. Our Challenge Athletes Foundation, we've raised over $70 million to keep athletes in the game of life through sport. iTunes, check out any of our interviews on iTunes or on BabbittVille.com. Hold on, everyone. We will be right back.